Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 414. I am your host, Thomas Hoven, and I've got another solo episode for you guys today. And so I wanted to start by recapping my marathon. So I ran my very first marathon ever on Saturday, October 28th. So I'm recording this on Tuesday, so just a mere 3 days ago. And it went really well. So let's get into it. So, first marathon ever, the Monumental Marathon in downtown Indianapolis. So, on Friday night, I went home from Wabash to be a little bit closer and went out with my parents. My brother went home with me. We got some Olive Garden, and that was delicious. I changed up my typical order, but it was still good, and so that was good. And then I woke up at not too crazy early, I think about 5:20, yes. So I woke up at 5:20 to try and prepare myself. I had a bagel with some peanut butter on it. That was quite delicious, one of my favorite meals, at least for breakfast. And so I had some nutrients in me and was ready for my big day. And I actually got to the race. So one of my best friends, Zach, his mom was also doing the marathon. And so I was able to ride with her from their house to the actual race, which was nice to have someone who had done it before to kind of give me some guidings in the beginning. And something kind of poetic, she said it may or may not be her final marathon, so I thought it was cool of her last one, my first one, and maybe it's not her last one, which would also be good too. But yeah, so we got there, so the race started at 8, and we got there probably a little after 7, so we stayed in the car to stay warm for a bit, got out about 7:15, 7:20, and we got out right in time because we were able to use the bathroom. And right when I came out of the bathroom, the line had like quadrupled in size, so I was glad that I had used the bathroom. However, probably about 20 minutes later, so 7:45, I felt that I needed to use the restroom again, but I was getting close to the start time, and I didn't want to, you know, miss the start, and so, because the line was still really long, so I did not go for it, and that would prove to be an issue later, so more on that when we get there. But yeah, and so I started, there were like five total waves of the marathon, A through E, and so I was in that middle one, wave C, so like the pros and the elite runners, they call them, they were wave A. So they started, and we subsequently followed them. So my actual start time was, I believe, like 8:09, 8:10. So a bit after 8. And the goal coming into the marathon was I wanted to at least go under 4 hours, 15 minutes. For reference, that's about a 9-minute, 40-second pace per mile. And I thought I had a chance to break 4 hours, which is about 9 minutes, 1 second, 2 seconds pace per mile. And so I was thinking, let's go for 4:15, you know, be on the conservative side to start things out, and then maybe if we're feeling good, we can see what happens. And so mile one was 9:22, so, you know, pretty reasonable, kind of what I was expecting. Mile two was 7:29, and that is when I decided, all right, screw it, we're breaking 4 minutes today. And so I ripped off a few more miles that were under 8 minutes, which was, I just did not prepare myself to do at all. And I was thinking maybe not be the smartest thing. And then I was in like that 8:15 to 8:25 range for a good while as well, all the way for a while. My parents and a friend's mom, not the one that was running, but a different who was there to support us, and my brother, I saw them at mile 4, so that was cool. And then, so I kept going, ripping off, like, you know, 8 minutes, 8:15s for a good bit. I saw my friend, so the son of the mom who was also running the race, I saw him and his dad, I think around, what was it around? It was, that would have been either right before or right after I used the bathroom for the first time. And so back to the bathroom issues, around, it was like mile 10.8, I all of a sudden really needed to poop, which is, if you know about marathons, is kind of one of the actual, like, one of the main problems, because, you know, you eat food to give yourself energy, but then you digest it, and also running, it kind of speeds up that digestion process, at least for me especially. But I was fortunate that there was a porta potty on the route right when I needed it, and so I got in and out pretty quickly, probably about 2 minutes. And so again, this is right before 11 miles, and then I was able to pick pace up quickly. So it was funny. So I probably around mile 8 or 9, there was a pace group, like, with the, so for, like, for different marks, whether it's 3 hours, 3.5 hours, 4 hours, there's like a pacer running with like a flag that says, hey, I'm going to run the race in this amount of time. So if you want to run it that time, stay with me and you'll do it. And so the 3:55 pacer, I passed around like 8 or 9 miles. But that pacer actually started in wave B. So they started a few minutes before me. So if I had finished with that pacer, it would have been quicker than 3:55. But nevertheless, so I passed them, then use the bathroom, and then get out of the bathroom. And after, like, probably not that long, maybe another half mile, I passed them again. And then very quickly again, right after the halfway point, so right after that 13.1 miles, I had to use the restroom again quite badly. And luckily, again, there was a porta potty right there, because I got very lucky. There were not porta potties as frequently throughout the course as I really expected. And if there wasn't one at this exact moment, I probably would have pooped my pants and had a very, very different day. So thankful to God for having me on that one. But so yeah, I used the bathroom again, and as I used the bathroom, it was another like 2 or 3 minutes, and that 3:55 group passed me again. What was unfortunate was after this second bathroom break, my legs kind of went numb, and, you know, maybe it was a little bit because I was running straight up faster than I had trained myself to really do so for that long, but I really think I could have made it to, like, at least 18, if not maybe 20 miles before feeling the way I felt, and I think it was just that break that really did me in. But I was still able to keep up pace of, like, that 8:15 to 8:30 for another, probably, I still kept it up through mile 18 or so. It just hurt more. Right around mile 18 is when things started kicking in a little bit, slowed down a little bit, maybe. Really not too much slower, like 8:35, 8:40 maybe. But then what really got me, mile 20, right after mile 20, my left hamstring had already, like, gone through a tightening phase, and right after mile 20, my right hamstring cramped up like it was just like it had never cramped up before, and so I had to stop and walked that off for another 2 to 3 minutes, and that was one of those, like, I was not too certain in that moment if I was going to be able to. I knew I was going to finish, like, walk the finish at the least, if not, you know, kind of like do a run walk thing. But I wasn't sure if I would be able to finish and break that 4 hour barrier. But after 2 or 3 minutes of walking, I picked things back up and got to mile 21 at right around the a little bit after the three-hour mark. I forget exactly. But so now I had a little less than an hour to finish 5 miles. So should be pretty doable, and was. So I ended up getting there. And so it was, I had, for reference, I had never gone above 20 miles in my training. For the next one, definitely want to get closer to 22, 23, just because when I hit that 20, it was like, wow, another six. And so when I got to mile 23, that was like, okay, you can do three more miles. But that 20 to 23 was really, really brutal. Just of like, man, am I going to get there? But I did. I did. So we got to mile 23, and then from there on, it was, I knew I had it in me to finish. One of the toughest mental parts, well, actually, let me back up before I get to that. I saw my mom again at mile 25, which was really nice. She was screaming, and that really did give me an extra boost. And then, so they had each and every mile marked out, you know, so 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way up to 26. So when I got to mile 26, it's like, okay, this is awesome, this is awesome, just 0.2 miles to go. But man, that last 0.2 miles felt like it was also another mile in itself, so that was tough. But we got it done in 3 hours, 55 minutes, and 36 seconds. So very proud, and now we just need to go under 3 hours, and that might not be the next marathon, maybe another 2 or 3 until we get there. But I do think I want to do some more and break 3 hours. I think that would be really cool. But probably maybe the biggest takeaway, well, I have a few takeaways from the marathon. First, a lot of people noted that they thought it was cool that I was smiling in a lot of the pictures taken of me, not just right after and crossing the finish line, but throughout the race. And a big reason for this was the support from all the random people, particularly the little kids that I got during the race. Really completely all of my training I did by myself. There were a couple guys that offered to run with me, and we tried to organize it together, but with our class schedules and when we ran, it didn't really work out. So, you know, all my training was a very solo mission, and so the kind of antithesis of that on race day, with just this, all these crowds not knowing me but cheering me on and it really carried, was really cool. As well as like the, I like to think I've had good experience with kids, and so whenever I see a chance to make them happy, it makes me happy. So whether it was giving them high fives, or a lot of them have like these signs that say touch this sign to power up, so I'd give it a smack and say yeah, so give the sign a smack, just so we're clear. But yeah, so that was cool, just, you know, the camaraderie aspect of things. Also just running with people was nice, because, you know, it was fun to either have someone that you didn't know who it was, but just running with them for a couple miles, or also the idea of passing people was cool. But I will say, a lot of the people that I passed between miles like 8 to 18, I saw passing me in those last few miles. So it all comes around, goes around, comes around, I suppose. Yes, another takeaway of the marathon, and this is one of the another obvious thing, but like, you can do hard things, you know. I think before I started training for this marathon over the summer, I don't think I'd ever run more than, I don't know if I had run more than a mile consecutively. I guess I had done like 2 to 3 miles on the treadmill, so count that if you will. I guess I had done a couple 20-minute runs outside. So I definitely never done over 3 miles consecutively before May. And all of a sudden, I just ran 26 under 4 hours. So I can do it. You can do it. Things are doable if you partition them out. So break up your goals. You know, you got to run 4 miles before you run 10. Got to run 10 before you run 20, stuff like that. And just put in the consistent training. And, man, I'll tell you, though. So one of the feelings that I'll always remember, and I think a lot of athletes will always remember, I will always remember the day after my first time hitting leg day in the gym, so actual, you know, squats and lunges, stuff like that. And, yeah, I remember that vividly, and it was, you know, freshman year football training back when I still had that last season of travel baseball that I've mentioned before. And so I remember having football the one day, and it's first day squatting, lunges with weights, and just the sharpness of that pain and just not being able to move, because we had baseball practice the next day, and there were another 3 or 4 guys on the team that were on my high school football team as well, and we were all just waddling around, not having a very productive practice, but a good memory. But I bring that up because the pain that I felt pretty immediately after finishing was probably the closest leg pain I've ever had to rivaling that. Might have been worse. I don't know. It's been a long time since freshman year football, so I don't exactly remember the feeling. But either way, and you know, three days later, my legs are still sore, especially the quads, but glutes and hammies and calves as well. So yeah, pretty much all parts of the legs. And Sunday I could not have ran. Yesterday I probably could have jogged a little bit. Today I could have run a few miles if I had to, but I didn't have to, so I definitely did not. I did hit chest day, which was nice. Yeah. However, my absolute biggest takeaway from the marathon was just, I guess, connects back to what I was saying with people and that support, but particularly with loved ones that, you know, you actually know and the impact that can have on you. And so I already mentioned my supporters who were there. But I want to highlight my mom specifically. So saw her at the 4 mile mark and saw her at that 25 mile mark as well. And at the 25 mile mark, she had like this sign. It was a very cute kind of DIY sign. Cause it was like a double manila folder stapled together with printer paper on it with stuff written on it. I was much too in the zone, or maybe much too out of the zone, to try and read as I ran by. But I did notice that there was a sign. And so I asked my mom, you know, what did she do between miles 4 and 25 that day? And especially because, so my brother and dad, they, after mile 4, when they saw me, they went to watch some volleyball, which was cool because, you know, I told them, yeah, it'd be great to see everyone once maybe. But really, I would just need someone at the finish to kind of, you know, take me home, because I don't know if I could have driven very well. But yeah, so I was like, Mom, what did you do? And she said that she had gone back to her office, but not to do work or anything, but to make that sign and relax for a little bit before coming back. And so that was really cool. And then she saw me at mile 25, and then walked, you know, the mile to the finish to meet me. And we waited around to watch a couple other people finish, and then eventually made it home. And so thank you, Mom, for doing that. But what was crazy was after after being downtown for this marathon and watching me from, she probably got there at like, probably, 8:15, 8:20-ish, and we didn't get home until about 3:30. So, you know, a full day of being in town, being with me, mom went. So my cousins, two of them who are brothers, they had a soccer tournament in Indy this weekend. So their family stayed with us, which was really nice. It was nice to spend some time with them. But so mom comes home, and then an hour later is leaving with them to go watch some soccer games. So just I just thought her level of support and just willingness to go cheer people on is really admirable. And I was reflecting on that, and it made a connection and a reminder for me. And so I've already mentioned like twice on the podcast how when it comes to fatherhood and being a parent, how it, you know, it might not be as Will and I said last week, it's not super complex. Like, we know what we're supposed to do. But I do want to emphasize, reiterate once more, that I know from experience, but I still know just from mere observation. I know that it is so, so hard to be a good parent, and I really don't want it to ever seem that I have minimized that, because I am so appreciative for my parents, but also other adults who have, you know, mentored and been there for me. And so an experience besides watching all that my parents do for me, whether it's like we've been talking about showing up and being there, besides that experience, something else that was kind of a funny thing that made me realize, man, this parenting thing's going to be a lot. Well, it took place a couple summers ago. So this was when I was interning at the law firm. And I started like pretty early in May, like the second week. So my siblings were still in high school, finishing up their junior and senior years. And so that first week on the job, you know, we're always playing, who has what car, because we're very fortunate to have five cars for the five of us, but one of them is a convertible. It's a Miata that is stick shift that my brother and I have both kind of driven, but I don't think ever without our dad in the car. So effectively, we none of us kids drive that. And so if our parents aren't driving that one, that ends up being the four cars for the five of us, which is still a lot more, which is still a lot of cars, so it's nice. But sometimes we have to coordinate, you know. And so mom or dad, they're like, hey, can you get your brother after work? Because, you know, he had practice after school. And so that day, since I had to get my brother after work, I went to the gym before work, so around 7:30 a.m.-ish, then worked 9 to 5, then went and picked Nate up and went home. And by the time I got home, I was gassed because, I mean, full day plus something before work and having to go get a kid afterwards, not my kid, but you see where I'm going. And I didn't even have to make dinner afterwards. And so in that moment, I told my parents at the time, I was like, man, I can see how this might be a lot. And now you take that one kid that I got and turn it into a 2, 3, 4. And you see how parents might be driven a bit crazy sometimes. But I guess it's good to realize it, even if it's after the times that we're driving them crazy, because it still gives us that chance to really be appreciative. So to my parents, to all the parents, thank you. Okay, moving on from the marathon, there's a quote from Brad Pitt in Troy where he plays Achilles. that I want to read. Now, before I read it, fun fact, in my first year at Wabash, freshman year, I took ancient Greek. And the professor, Professor Wickheiser, she was great. And she had us all pick Greek names that we would go by in class. And so I was not Thomas in class. In class, I was known as Achilleos, or Achilles. So I've always been a fan of his. This quote might be a reason why. So in the movie Troy, Achilleos says, "The gods envy us. They envy us because we're mortal, because any moment might be our last. Everything is more beautiful because we're doomed." And he, in the movie, he's saying that to the priestess Cassandra, and she's on the Troy side. But I think that quote is powerful and also true. And I think that's a relatively common belief that, you know, the beauty in humanity is the mortality, that we don't have infinite time, and so we have to make the time that we do have count. And I guess I have a couple of things I want to say about that. One is just that on the first solo podcast, the one before this, when I was talking about my reasoning for starting the podcast and just a philosophy of life of how I think that if you want to do something, that you should do it, that you should go for it. I think that quote about I'm trying to say that because life is finite, we have an obligation to make it as beautiful as we can. And so that maybe I think could give some more background into the thinking that I was mentioning about starting this podcast and also just the way I live my life. The other thing I want to say about the quote is that there's this deeper lesson that we take away from it. And so breaking it down, to say that the gods envy us because we're mortal, that at first, that almost seems paradoxical, right? Because, you know, you can see you can see why there might be a desire to be immortal, because if you never die, it's like, oh yeah, I never die, I live forever. But again, as I mentioned, like, people seem to have this consensus that they agree it's good that we're mortal. Now, some people will disagree, and we'll say that's a conversation for another time for now. But just thinking about that, I made this connection that, like, a lot of times the good and the bad, the things that we want but the things that we don't want, go hand in hand. An example of what I mean by this is take a romantic partner, girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever. A girlfriend I might have, she might be this light in my life. She might be this person I love the most. But then, because she is, she also is the person who has the most ability to hurt me, right? I think that is a natural consequence of humanity, that the things that we love, the things that we want, end up being the things that hurt us most. And I think that also makes sense, because, you know, something that you don't care about, something that you don't like, something that you're not invested in, it's not going to affect you when it changes or when it does something that is unexpected. I don't know. And yeah, I thought it was a cool little, like, I don't know. Maybe I need to, okay. I think I've thought of a way to explain what I'm getting at. And so a lot of people have probably heard, you know, there's no good without evil, there's no light without dark. And I think that's That's true, and it's very related to what I'm saying. But take the light and the dark, right? It's not that there's light and there's dark and that there's the line in between, which I guess there is. What I'm getting at is there's the sun, and the sun is responsible both for light and for darkness, in the sense that when the sun's shining on us, it's light, and when the sun is not shining on us, it's dark. And so in the same way, things and people and places and relationships that we love, when those are good, life is good. We're in the light. And when we're not being shined upon by those people, by those relationships, we're in the dark. And hopefully that made a little bit of sense. And I'll leave that as something for you all to ponder. So thanks for listening, and I will see you guys next time. Peace.